Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Good morning, Dr. Marion Mass.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for having me. I actually have never made it to testify before the committee. I was part of a panel that was underneath the hood of Congress. So
thank you for clarifying.
I have to clear that up. That's okay. They can have me, though, if they want me.
She should be testifying, but she was part of an expert panel that I knew you were proud to be part of. And I do want to get into your take of, because there was so much breaking last week, but even SCOTUS taking up the issue, which will probably have national ramifications, the latest issue on the issue of children, protecting children from the types of invasive surgeries or even powerful medications involved in their gender identity. We'll get into that in a minute, but I did want to talk about this. This was your latest that you had put that out there. About Vox.com, the article, what about the fight between Anthem, its Blue Cross Blue Shield, and its anesthesiologists? And what was that fight really about?
Well, first of all, the title of that article kind of bothered me because it almost implied that the author of the article, only he knew exactly what it was about. And I know that's not what he was saying, is only me. But, you know, it's an opinion piece, it seemed to me. And if you follow me on Twitter, I am at @mass_Marion, and the whole Twitter thread just went absolutely wild. I think it's like up to 180,000 views right now. So I do want to talk about that for several reasons. So, and we can go through it piece by piece, and if we do this verbally, I think it will be really helpful for everyone who's listening. So I'm actually pulling it up on my computer as we're talking.
So it starts out that the American Society of Anesthesiologists, they issue this dire warning in November that one of the largest insurance companies in America, Anthem, Blue Cross Blue Shields, had unilaterally declared it will no longer pay for anesthesia care if the surgery or the procedure goes beyond an arbitrary time limit, etc. And so this announcement, I guess, is what kicked off
Exactly. And this kind of happened around the time of the shooting, which my comment on the shooting is we are a nation of laws. And, not killing people is part of our law. And, you know, regardless of what someone does for a living, there is a family involved there. You know, this man has children, and while I may not agree with everything this man does or this man did, that is no way to comport oneself. So, and I will not sanction killing.
No.
I think most physicians would not.
No.
So in any case.
No, but it really,
at the
time that, I mean, the fact that you know, we had this high profile CEO Brian Thompson, UnitedHealthcare, and he's gunned down by somebody etching the bullets with words that are used to describe the insurance industry, like deny and that sort of thing. And so I think it did kind of push these issues into the headlines, if you will. And don't you? I mean, that. So I think more people, the good, I guess, the if there's a silver lining, it's that people are discussing these insurers and their policies and that sort of thing.
100%. And actually, let's go back to that same statement. We are a nation of laws. And, you know, we all know that in, what was it, the end of the 2010, we passed the Affordable Care Act. And what did the Affordable Care Act do? Well, it required that everyone get health care insurance. Now, people could say, oh, well, we should all have health care insurance. You know, should is kind of one of those loaded words. But this was a gift to the insurance industry, was it not? Mm-hmm. And if you look at what has happened since that time, I mean, remember, we were all promised, oh, you know, families will save $2,500 on the premiums. But essentially, our national spend on health care has doubled since the time that the law was enacted in the dead of night, right before Christmas, which is about what's going to happen in a couple weeks when, you know, we all better be paying attention as to whatever Congress is going to shove into the year-end bill. And, you know, I will be paying attention. Mm-hmm. But when we take and we make one must have insurance as the model of coverage, well, that becomes a problem. So, you know, you can backtrack and see what I've written in the past. I mean, 2017, I wrote a piece, The Fatal Flaw of the ACA, Coverage is Not Care. And if we are going to continue to make coverage the model of healthcare, we're going to fail, right? Mm-hmm. So if you took this setting where we allowed the insurers, and then what happened after that point? Well, the big insurers just got bigger. So we call them the BUCAs, right? Blue Cross, which is, you know, Anthem is part of, you know, it's a, sort of a family, if you want to call it a family, a dysfunctional family maybe. So Blue Cross, United, Cigna, Aetna, some people leave out Humana because they're smaller. You know, we have lots of people who run around the United States trumpeting what I call a bumper sticker slogan, we must have Medicare for all or single payer. We almost have single payer because most of these insurers, like, serve as the coverage for someone's care. So I think this idea of an individual mandate was a law that was passed that has allowed these insurance companies to become bigger. But I also think that everyday Americans, I hope they're listening, and I hope they're paying attention to something. And that something is, you have choices. Mm-hmm. Over the years since we've passed the Affordable Care Act, as we had the deductibles rise and everyone discovered, no, they're not paying less, $2,500 less a year. They're paying more. Everyone's premiums are going up. Their deductibles are going up. Their copays are going up. Everyone's paying more. And they're continually getting less, as I like to say. So the money's going into some middleman pocket, including these BUCAs. But the good news is for the Americans who get their coverage through their employer, and I may get the number wrong, I think it's 50 or 60%, you know, gets their coverage through their employer. There's employers that are actually discovering that they can do something called direct pay, where they're self-pay. And some of those employers do self-pay, but then they still pay the BUCA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bad idea. I mean, haven't we discovered that we shouldn't trust these BUCAs? I mean, look what they have done. They've snapped up the PBMs, which we've talked about before. We won't get into PBMs, but y'all should look up PBMs mm-hmm. and what they do. And we could have another whole show, 10 shows on the PBMs. But, you know, these BUCAs have snapped up, you know, the PBMs. Some of these BUCAs, like Aetna, is tied into the big box pharmacies. You know, like Aetna is owned by CVS Health, which also owns the PBM CVS Caremark. So you have these incestuous dysfunctional families that are running American healthcare and minting money. And instead of having your employer pay the BUCA to self-pay the plan, there's really wonderful people that are coming out, and they're not brokers anymore. Like, I call them benefit managers. There's a guy that really, I think, was part of the revolution of this. His name is Dave Chase. And Dave and I, like, spoke a long, long time ago, several times, and I haven't spoke to him for a while, but I do follow him, and I actually really wish I could, you know, hang out with him for a while and talk about this all over again. But essentially, he spawned a whole group of benefit managers, and there's probably other people that are responsible for this type of setting.
But let me ask you something really quick, just so we get into. So as far as the story about Anthem's policy, what the op-ed piece here is saying is that basically the anesthesiologists, they themselves would have taken on more costs, right? That's the point of that article, that when they declined to do it, that it's how the anesthesia services are billed, partially on the basis of how long a procedure takes, for example.
Well, let's go to the Vox article. So
I just want to explain it because I don't think we fully explained it, and I just wanted to go there to get your take on that. So do you think
I don't mind at all.
So do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that, in other words, Anthem's policy, they're saying, would have cost the anesthesiologist, not the patient, because of how they're billed?
What do you want? Less anesthesiologists in America? There's already a shortage, and especially in rural areas. So there's a couple points that I made in the long tweet mm-hmm. that I put out there. Americans would come along and say, okay, it's all the greedy doctor's fault that, you know, healthcare costs so much. But if you look at us, we're, once you take away our overhead, were about 7.4 cents on the healthcare dollar. And I understand that Americans are suffering and hurting, but when you're suffering and hurting and you're paying more and you're getting less, it's a better idea to deal with the people that are actually able to give you the care. Because if you knock out the people that are giving you the care, you're not going to have care at all. Instead, you should be tracking your healthcare dollar and realizing who's getting most of the healthcare dollar. Mm-hmm. So as Americans, if you're paying your insurer and then your insurer wants to not pay your anesthesiologist and your anesthesiologist comes along and says, wait a second, I got $250,000 in medical loans, and then I'm going to like run off into industry mm-hmm. because I can't pay these loans. Well, then the major problem that the patient is going to have is they don't have access to the very kind of doctor that is often the crucial one when you are sick or in critical care. And the point that I made at the beginning of this long Twitter thread, and man, that thread really got some yes. views. I mean, I think it's like 180,000 or something. I'm like, I'm trying to like, you know, make a tiramisu for my friend's birthday and decorate my house and get ready for my kids. I haven't had a weekend off for a while. And then like, I was like, I really got to write about this. And I wrote the tweet and I had no idea it would get so crazy. Yeah. But the beginning part that I mentioned was I served as a pediatric hospitalist for 15 years. And in that setting, I may get called to a difficult delivery and the patient, the mom might have the critical airway and the baby might have a critical airway. And I was grateful because that anesthesiologist intubates more patients than anyone else in the hospital. It's what they do every day. For them, it's like changing a tire. And you want a good anesthesiologist yes. in your hospital. If I have a patient that I can't get an IV in and they need, like, I mean, I've had this happen before. You know, baby is born, blood sugar is 40. You know, that will ruin a brain. And if I can't get the IV in, I need the help of the anesthesiologist. You know, when there's a code in the ER, the anesthesiologist is part of the code team. Like, these are the doctors that we call on when we are critically ill. So I think that's the first thing y'all understand is you want good anesthesiologists. And now if you take a look at what anesthesiologists are going through, and then if you look at that guy's, the original Vox article, mm-hmm. you know, he's claiming that the average salary of an anesthesiologist is, you know, I think it was like $450,000. Well, I had plenty of anesthesiologists texting me saying I've either never seen that or if I saw it, it was because I was doing so much extra and mm-hmm. moonlighting so that I could try to pay back my loans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe Americans that are listening will be angry at me for saying this. I hope they're not. I hope what they understand is all those anesthesiologists put in their 4 years of college, their 4 years of medical school. I believe their residency is 4 years. And then they're busy working. And part of their work is they have to stay overnight in the hospital. And they're put under these stressful situations. Yeah. Now, look, all of you who are listening, maybe you could say, well, you lucky doctors, you know, you have the ability to do this. And yes, I do feel blessed that I have the ability to be a physician. And mind you, I only barely got to six figures last year. And I'm not ever saying pay me more. All right. Mm-hmm. But when a journalist comes along and giving a number that doesn't make sense to me, well, right. I looked under the hood of the study that he had. And the study was based on under 300 anesthesiologists that answered the results of a survey. There's 42,000 anesthesiologists in the United States. And in that particular survey of 7,000 doctors, 200 and some who are anesthesiologists, in that survey, 38% of the anesthesiologists did the extra work. So they have their job, which is not even a 40-hour work week. It's probably like a 60-hour work week. And then on top of it, they're hustling and, you know, running off to, you know, maybe they're taking a plane flight or a drive, probably going to a rural area and serving as that critical doctor in a hospital that doesn't have the full coverage. Mm-hmm.
So they've, you know, I was just looking at statistics as we continue the conversation with Dr. Miriam Mass, saying that the average single coverage premium has increased 6% year over year, but for, and the average family 7%. But if you look back from 2019, It's increased 24%. If you go back to 2014, on average, the average family's coverage for insurance premium, health insurance premiums, are up 52% since 2014.
Crazy, isn't it?
That is staggering. So is part of this, I mean, what is this? Is part of it, is part of this Affordable Care Act? Is it just that the cost of these things have gone up? Is it monopolies within the insurance, the insurance industry? What do you feel is to blame here?
Well, there's so many things to blame, right? I mean, certainly, like, who's sucking the money out of the system?
Right.
I mean, very simply put, the middlemen. Well, who are the middlemen? The insurance companies, their associated PBMs, the hospital systems middlemen called the GPOs, that hopefully in the next 2 years we'll learn more about them, and certainly we will if I have anything to say about it. I mean, are physicians taking a cut of the pay? Absolutely. You know, is pharma taking a cut of the pay? Absolutely. But I think Americans have to ask themselves, what do I need? Well, you're going to need good, well-trained care. And I'm not even saying, you must pay doctors more. What I like to say is, please don't keep cutting the doctor's pay. You know, like, I'm no fan of the AMA, but they have this very nice graph, and it's about Medicare physician payments. And if you look at the cumulative change since 2001, the cost inflation of practicing is, if you start at zero, it's now up at like 55%. Mm-hmm. But then if you look at the Medicare physician payment, it's up 10%. So the bottom line is, this is like adjusted for inflation, the Medicare physician payment has declined 29% since 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And, we all have to pay for our health insurance too.
Right.
And if we're an independent practice, we have to pay for our employees, and we're happy to do that, because our employees are like wonderful, adjuncts to everyone's care. But if you keep on doing this to physicians, then what physicians are going to do is they're going to flee for industry. I mean, lots of them have done it already.
They have.
Look at the numbers.
Yes.
And mind you, when I say the Medicare physician payment, that it's declined overall this much, functionally, graphed against inflation, realize that people say, we need to set prices. Well, we have them set because that very same AMA, through this very complicated system of RDUs, they pretty much set what a physician gets paid. And then that set amount of what a physician gets paid, the big insurance companies that we talked about at the beginning, mm-hmm. the BUCAs, Blue Cross, United Cigna, Aetna Health, et cetera, they base what they're paying physicians in part based on the Medicare payment. So, we kind of have a system. It's so socialized already. It's ridiculous. But if you need someone.
I just want to interject here because I had looked at the stat, Dr. Mass. I'd looked at the stat of 52% higher premiums since 2014. And that's when, is it a coincidence that that's when the Affordable Care Act officially it was fully implemented starting in January of 2014. How much of the Affordable Care Act and doing things like having provisions for individual and employer responsibility or creating, I say in air quotes, the health insurance marketplaces with the federal financial assistance talking, I just wonder if when that huge piece of legislation went into effect fully in 2014, is that what helped fuel this huge rise in our healthcare costs?
Absolutely. But what I'll say is it was broken before then.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what people were looking at doing to try to fix it, those of us who have read the book America's Bitter Pill by Stephen Brill,
mm-hmm.
we realized it was all the vultures in the system got together and plied upon Congress, and that's how the bill got passed. And there were all these backdoor deals and all kinds of other things that were going on. Now, I always like to think, how can we move forward?
Mm-hmm.
Now we see this very messy system.
Yes.
And if we want to move forward, well, what do we need? Well, we need to figure out where the money's going. The first and foremost thing we really need is radical transparency. You know, first of all, price transparency. Like, it would be really nice if a patient saw, okay, here's my money that went to either my employer or, you know, and hopefully the employer's just direct paying, you know, the people who are taking care of their employees. But, of course, sometimes the employer pays the buka, like I said. And, you know, it would be nice to follow the trail of the healthcare dollar. But we can't do it. I mean, President Trump in 2018 put forth a price transparency executive order. And I think I might be wrong on the numbers. I think it's about 25 or 30% of hospitals that are now complying with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a problem. I mean, if you're not going to put out, like, how much things cost, how can we even get around the whole cost curve?
Yeah.
Especially when you think about the amount of money that that hospitals end up getting paid. And now the hospitals are running around complaining, we're so poor. I mean, like, I look at some of their CEOs and I think to myself, I don't understand why you're so poor. You know, like, how does this happen? And I don't, my goodness, let me just state too, I don't mean that we should be attacking hospital CEOs either.
No.
We need hospitals. We need physicians. We need hospitals. Sometimes we need meds. You know, we do need the assurance that if a disaster happens, the care is going to be taken, you know, that we'll get care. And, you know, before any of that starts, we need really good preventative care. So I hope in the coming weeks, what I'd really love to see is that we do codify that Trump executive order on price transparency.
Yes.
And I'll actually even point out the Biden administration, they must have agreed with that because they actually doubled down on their own executive order on the penalties with price transparency. Very interesting, though, when the Biden administration did that, they also announced, I'm not sure what happened. I try to find things out, and sometimes it's hidden from me, and I'm a pretty good looker. But when the Biden administration announced, like, the doubled down penalties for not complying with price transparency, which was a good thing, they wanted Medicare Advantage to have exceptions from price transparency. I mean, I don't get that. Why do we make exceptions?
Why?
And by the way, I
wonder why.
Well, Medicare Advantage, it's like essentially, you know, who's the biggest purveyor of Medicare Advantage is UnitedHealthcare. How interesting, right? And you know who helps sell UnitedHealthcare, Medicare Advantage plans? The AARP.
Yep.
It's just like wild stuff.
They're all
it's
in cahoots.
Oh, cahoots is
as
the
my
word.
Dad it's says, like, cahoots.
Yes.
Now, I see that you announced, Dr. Mary Mass, you're going to be on this panel coming up at the National Press Club. And you put out on social media, competition plus choice needed to fix healthcare. Are you realistically hopeful that that happens under DOGE, under a new administration?
Well, I sure hope so, because, like, you know, here we are, and you know, we're about a fifth of our economy is healthcare. Mm-hmm. If we all want to fix the economy, if we don't fix healthcare, we're not going to fix the economy, right? But what I would actually stress to all of your listeners, it's so important to pay attention to where your money goes.
Yes.
I mean, Dawn, you know, I think you've met my husband before.
Yes.
And he's like, he says these things. My husband is I call him my secret weapon, you know, because if you met him, he talks less than I do. But every time he opens his mouth, he says something really important. A long time ago, he's like, you darn well better care about your own money because no one else is going to. And if someone else is spending our money, like if we're, you know, the average American family, whatever it is now, $28,000 going into the premiums, if you're spending that money and then another $7,000 before the bloated third party payer that pretends to be insurance gets kicked in, well, then you better pay attention to where that money's going. So I'd love to, like, you know, to stress to all of your patients, pay attention to where the money's going, because what we need to end with, you know, and I pray this, I pray people look underneath the hood and look underneath the hood of the people that have been advising for forever, because whoever's been advising for forever, they're certainly not doing a good job, right?
Or maybe they're doing a good job, but not just for us. Maybe that's a piece of it. Dr. Maryam Mass, I could talk to you all day. I could listen to you all day because you're brilliant. We look forward to the Healthcare Competition Conference, National Press Club hosting it, presented by Capital Forum, that you'll be a major part of. So I'll be reporting on that. That's coming up on December 12th, so coming up soon. But thank you so much for your time. You've been gracious, as usual. God bless, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. God bless you and your family. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Dr. Marion Mass.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.